Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and AVU Technologies. Now here's your host, Ward Morrow.
This is Jason Fornicola filling in for Ward Morrow. Today we'll be joined by Congressman Joseph Crawley, former Congresswoman Barbara Kennelly, Democratic strategist Bob Wiener, and Families USA Executive Director Ron Pollack. But first, we caught up with Senator Tom Harkin about Republican efforts to repeal the health care law.
Senator, what are your constituents in Iowa saying to you about a Republican push to repeal health care, and how do you respond to those sorts of questions that you may be getting?
Well, look at it this way. I think in my state of Iowa, going back a year and a half, all those famous town meetings, some that I was involved in, there was a lot of confusion. And that confusion reigned most of the year before last year. And then after the bill got passed, it kind of calmed down. Now more and more people are picking up on things. I can't tell you how many people now said, oh, my gosh, you mean my kid can stay on my policy now? I mean, that's a big deal. And pre-existing conditions, can't cut you off. So more and more people are saying, wait, there's a lot of benefits for me here. And I'm talking about people that have health insurance. And so we've seen the uncertainty go down and the support go up. And I think that's one of the reasons the Republicans are pushing so hard right now to get a repeal, because they know the longer it's out there, the more people will latch onto it and like it, and it will be hard to repeal.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com.
We've been joined by Congressman Joseph Crowley of New York. Welcome to Inside Government.
Thank you, Jason. Good to be with you.
We have you here today at the Families USA Health Action 2011 conference in Washington. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing here today.
Well, we're here today to talk about health care and what it means to America's families and why it was important we did what we did and why it's important that we see this bill through. It's been enacted, and now it needs to needs to be rolled out and implemented. And I'm of the strong belief the more the American people understand what's in this bill and what's in this law, the more they're going to like what they see.
So let's get into some of that stuff. What's in it? How does it benefit the American people, average American worker?
Already we've seen some of these benefits already rolled out. If you were a child that had a pre-existing condition, you will no longer be able to be denied health care coverage or health insurance. Your parents will be able to provide for you that health care coverage. And that means tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands possibly in terms of expenses for an individual, for a child. If you have right now a cap on how much money can be spent on you, that will no longer exist throughout your lifetime. There's no longer a lifetime cap. If you're a senior citizen and you're in the Medicare system and you're on Medicare Part D, and you're in the donut hole, you've already gotten a check for $250 to help you through last year. More help is on the way this year. The cost within the donut hole will be 50% to you and 50% to the Medicare system, and eventually that will be the donut hole will be done away with. If you're a child and if you're a young person under 26 years of age and you're working or not working, but if you are working, even if you don't have health care coverage, you can stay on your parents' health care coverage. I mean, there are just a myriad of things that are in this bill that help working class Americans, middle class, working class Americans. And I think the more they, as I said before, the more they know about it, the more they're going to like it.
Now, we know that the majority of the reforms come in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening now in this sort of first wave that's coming to get people acclimated to this law?
Well, I think small businesses have the ability to get tax credits so that they can provide health care coverage for their workers now if they aren't doing it so far. And if they are doing it right now, they're going to get help and assistance in doing that. So I think that's critical in terms of, you know, what are we doing to help create an atmosphere for job growth and helping our economy. And I think that's a critical aspect that's gotten so little play. And it really isn't widely believed because people don't even know about it. But when they hear it, that can't be true. Yes, right now, 35% credit is given to you by the federal government to help you provide health care for your employees. Quite frankly, if you're a company that's less than 50 employees, you don't even have to do anything. You won't be penalized. Nothing will happen to you. There's this notion that we're trying to hurt small businesses is just a red herring. It's a misnomer. But that's one way in which we're helping to ease this in. That will be ratcheted up to 50% coverage, support by the federal government, and eventually phased out. But that's something that people don't realize right now that's out there. They should take advantage of.
And how does that differ how things were in the past?
Well, in the past, there was no assistance from the federal government to help small businesses afford health care coverage. Prior to the passage of this bill, that didn't exist. So I think it's remarkable. In fact, that was one of the first pieces of the legislation to go into effect. We recognized early on the best way to help our economy and the best way to get more universal coverage for people who don't have it today is to provide it, help small businesses provide that coverage.
Now, we know that there are some of your colleagues in the House who are pushing to repeal this, or they want to make a change.
Yep.
What are you hearing from people, and are they really that serious about it? Is it something that could get any traction whatsoever? I mean, it seems unlikely at this point to completely reverse it. But
right. Well, my sense is that this is more about throwing red meat to the base of their party. And quite frankly, it may not be the base of the party. I think it's really to the Tea Party, folks. The American people, through polls, consistently have shown now that they may not be 100% behind what we've done so far, but they don't want it repealed. Over three quarters of those polled by the AP have said, do not repeal this bill. We've had some Democrats who voted against the bill who will not vote to repeal it. So I think because they want to give it a chance to work, I think that the impact on our economy would be enormous. We're expected to grow by 4 million jobs in healthcare alone over the next 10 years because of this bill. If we were to repeal this bill, it would be an additional burden of $230 billion to our deficit. So repealing this bill is really what's going to stop job creation in this country. They called this bill the job killer. I think the reverse is true, that if you were to repeal this bill, it would actually stop job growth in this country.
So I see some parallels here, and I'd like you to comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how people view this bill and how they view the federal government and federal employees. So overall, when people just hear federal employees or federal government, they say negative things. But when you break it down, you know, almost job by job, what federal employees do, how they, the services they provide the American people, it almost seems like you're getting a similar reaction when you're talking about the healthcare bill. Overall, you say, the support might not be there, or if it is, it's lukewarm on mm-hmm. some sides. Mm-hmm. But whenever you talk about the specific benefits that, each point, line by line in the bill, then people start to come around and say, my son or my daughter can stick around on my plan until he or she's 26, or no more pre-existing conditions, things like that. Can you comment on that?
Well, first of all, what I think is important to comment on is that we heard a lot of criticisms about members of Congress not reading the bill, not knowing what was in the bill. And I don't think that was justified, but, that was a political ploy by those who wanted to see this bill fail. I think it's important for the American people to understand what's in this bill. Now, I don't expect them to go out and take the 2,000-page bill and read it and say they're going to understand it. Or see, it's not like reading a book. I can't wait for the next chapter. Please don't tell me how this ends. I can't wait to get to the end of the book. It's not like that. But you don't have to read the bill to find out what is in the bill. And the more this bill rolls out, the more people appreciate what benefits are in there and how it applies to their lives. What I think is critical here is that the American people really did send a message to us in Washington Election Day. It wasn't about health care. It was about jobs, and it was about the economy. They want to see us move to improve the economy and create jobs in this country. Nothing in H.R. 1 that would repeal the health care bill would create a single job. Nothing in H.R. 1 will reduce the deficit by one penny. Nothing in H.R. 1 will do anything to address the concerns of the middle class in this country and the working people in this country. And I've seen nothing in the first 10 bills the Republicans have put forward that will create a single job or reduce the deficit. So there seems to be a lot of, throwing red meat to their political base, and it's very political right now. The reality is that what we want for the American people, what I want for the American people, is what I have as a member of Congress. In 2014, we will have to enter into the exchange. And we based the model on the exchange in terms of what we offered on what members of Congress and federal employees receive today. And that's why my call and my challenge to my colleagues that if you voted, if you ran against the health care bill and you voted to repeal it, you know, are you going to take your own federally subsidized health care insurance? And, you know, some would say that's political. It's partly political, but it's really to expose the hypocrisy that I see that is so neck deep in my Republican colleagues today.
You're right. There's a lot of noise about this. There's a lot of reporting. There's a lot of commentary. There's a lot of analysis. But the one thing that really seems to matter the most is what the people think. So what are your constituents telling you in New York about this?
You know, overwhelmingly, my constituency have supported that. I was reelected by over 80% of the vote. And I wouldn't dare say that's reflective of my position on health care alone. I think that a lot goes into that. But generally speaking, my constituency is supportive of this. And many of my constituents have health care right now, either through their union, they may be retirees, but they have health care, or they have it through their job. They could be city or state workers, or they could, for a myriad of ways, have it. But it's not about them. They know this is about all of us. And that for every person that has health care, there's a person who doesn't have health care in my district. And so the burden that places on all of us, because we're paying for the people who don't have health care, to give people the opportunity to purchase their own health care, what could be wrong with that? You know, my constituency gets that.
What's the job market like in your district in New York?
It's tough. It's not an easy market right now for my constituency. In certain segments of my population, we have about 50% unemployment. You know, overall, it's on average with the rest of the city. But it's been a tough time for the city. And as much as we felt the brunt of the recession later, it lingers longer. It lingers longer in New York City. What I really appreciate about what the president talked about today was his focus on green energy and green jobs. I think our challenge is going to be, how do we make those green jobs real for people in New York City, in the Bronx, and in Queens? Right now, when they hear that, they're for it, but they think that's about Silicon Valley. They think that's about California and Arizona and Texas and Florida, the Sun Belts, but not about us. And we have to find to make that connection for them.
Last year, 2010, I took a trip to Europe, and I was on a bus most of the time. And I saw wind farms all over the place. It was fairly common.
Yeah.
How do we get to that point where we're doing those things?
I think as long as the price of gasoline remains and hovers around $3.50, I think it continues to create atmosphere for incentivizing governmental efforts for finding alternative fuels. The reality is that much of what we need to do needs to be done in conjunction with our government. This is not something that the private sector in of itself will do on its own muster. There needs to be created incentives to do that through tax structure to help them see that through and do it both in short and long term so they can recoup the investment that they're making in those types of energy. But I agree with you. I've been to Germany. I've seen the Autobahn. I've seen the solar panels. Much of the technology that was developed right here in the United States initially has been exploited outside the United States. We've heard about what China is doing in trying to capture the market on solar panel creation, and we just can't let that happen. What the president talked about, that was the president was talking about in terms of the Sputnik moment, that it may not be as discernible as a rocket going into outer space, but this is a Sputnik moment because we need to be first again. We need to energize our country to understand why it's important we be first, because it's about our sustainability as a nation. And I think the president hit a home run by those comments the other night.
Congressman, I'm going to give the last word to you as we come down into our last minute here.
Well, I want to thank you again for this day. I want to thank Families USA for putting this together. I think getting the word on Health Action today, Health Action 2011, about what this bill, what the health care bill has done and will do for the American people is critical. How it'll help save money in this country when it's fully implemented, how it will reduce our deficit, how it will employ more people, but more importantly, what this will do to improve the lives of people heretofore who have not been able to afford health insurance for themselves and for their families. That's what this is about, making sure they get the word, understand what is in this bill that's going to improve their lives.
Congressman Joseph Crowley from New York, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
We're going to pause here for a short break. You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com.
Attention AFGE members, government and military employees. Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to get items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Barbara Cannelli, President and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Jason.
So tell us a little bit about your organization, the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare.
We are a nonpartisan organization. We have a million-plus members across these United States. They come from all walks of life and all political persuasions. The one thing they have in common is they like Social Security and Medicare, and they want to preserve it. And that's why they join us. It's only $12 a year, and, they're all over the country, and I go out and see many of them often. But they can't come to Washington, and so what we do is go up to the Hill and visit with the senators and the representatives and tell them why it's so important to preserve Social Security and Medicare.
And so give us some of those details as to why it is so essential that we preserve these programs.
Let me tell you about Social Security first. You know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt brought forth income security for older people, because when you get older, you stop working. And then, you know, if you haven't saved enough, you've got some problems. Social Security, we all save. I'm sure, Jason, out of your paycheck and certainly out of my paycheck, the Social Security tax is taken. So when you retire, you've got something there to take care of you. Now, the average Social Security check, people don't know it and they hardly believe it, is $14,000 a year. For women, it's $12,000. And you say, well, how do you live on that? Well, let me tell you. 90% of the people who are on it, it's two-thirds of their income. And you know what? It gives them independence and dignity. And it's their money. They've paid into it. So it's very important to preserve it. Every industrial country has a much more generous Social Security than we do. But for years, Social Security has had its enemies. For years, when President Roosevelt put forth the big fights over it all through the years. And then we've got to the point now where Wall Street is the end-all, be-all for everything. And, President George Bush decided he wanted to privatize it. Well, by privatizing it, the money was going to go into Wall Street. I go around and I talk to people. They say, Barbara, aren't you glad that we didn't privatize Social Security? Because, they've lost assets in their house. Their 401k plans have gone down. But, you know, Social Security is there, and that's why we work so hard to protect it.
What are some of the key steps that need to be taken to ensure that Social Security remains in its current form and is there for someone maybe like my age when it's time to retire?
Let me tell you something. You won't believe it now, and that's why our members are older. You don't care about it till you're older, and I understand that. Young people have to get student loans and get married and have mortgages and educate kids, and I know that. But as you get older, you realize the importance of the program. Now, I'm all for, if they want to look at the solvency of the program, and we know it's healthy to 2037, but then it drops off to like 23% of the money wouldn't be there. And, if you want to have a solvency commission again and look at, the future of Social Security, I'm all for that. What I am not for is what has happened in the last couple of years. It's been looked at is how you reduce the deficit by law. Social Security cannot add to the deficit, and so as a result, they haven't contributed one thin dime to the deficit, and that's all kind of got mixed up.
That's a very interesting point. Where I think a lot of people didn't know that if Social Security is not contributing by law to the deficit,
it can't borrow and it can't contribute to the deficit. And it's had a surplus. I mean, through the 90s and the after that, it had like $200 billion surpluses. And, you know, when I was on the committee, Ways and Means Committee that reformed it, and we knew there was going to be surpluses because the baby boomers were coming. We knew all about that, and we were preparing for that. And we said to ourselves, well, where can we put that money? Where would it be safe? And, of course, safe in government bonds. And what we have a debate really about right now is, do you honor those bonds or don't you? Of course we should honor those bonds. We can't default on those bonds. But a lot of people don't want to.
Talk about the differences that you see in the debate between when you were serving in Congress and now.
As I said, a lot of it hasn't changed. There's been a tendency among many people who don't think we need government to do anything but maybe fight a war. And you know, they don't believe in government. They think the marketplace is. The marketplace is fine. We all want to be in the marketplace. We all want to be independent. We all want to do our own thing. But there are certain things we can't do. We can't build roads. And you know, the educational system, our public schools made this country what it was. And so there's a number of things we can't do. And as a result, you pay taxes. And as a result of legislation in 1935, Social Security began, and you had to pay a payroll tax. But it's totally different from the income tax.
So what do you think the future is for the conversation of Social Security and Medicare?
I would hope wisdom prevails. And I'm leaving here, and I'm going to a meeting with a number of senators who are trying to organize, because you can't take this for granted anymore. And, you know, we've got to have support in the Congress. But I would hope wiser minds would prevail, and we'd know that any country worth its salt should have a security, income security, not only for its retirees when the paycheck stops, but, you know, you at your age, Jason, I don't know if you're married or not or have children, but you going home from work, could have it last night, you could have had an accident. And if you had young children and you're the breadwinner, you know, you have Social Security. And if you get disabled, any one of us could get it disabled. And Social Security is there for that, too. It's a safety net.
Exactly. You never know when something unexpected is going to happen to you and how much it will impact your life.
And also, a country like ours, and I keep repeating myself, but a country like the United States of America should understand that people who pay into a system should get the return on that system so they can live with dignity.
And you mentioned taking a trip up to Capitol Hill to, you know, rally some support around this issue.
I've taken many a trip to rally support. I'm sure
you've seen enough around up there to tell a couple of good stories. What kind of support are you getting from members of Congress on this issue?
We have some heroes. We really do have some heroes, and thank gosh that we do. I mean, you know, we just had the Entitlement Commission. We were very nervous about that because they were looking at Social Security to plug a hole in deficit. And, you know, by law, by the president's making that commission, it had to have 14 votes. It got 11. I wish it hadn't got 11, but it got 11. So it didn't go, that legislation didn't go before the House and the Senate. But, you know, there are those that really don't think we need the system. And those people, many of them, especially on the commission, and they were all fine people, don't get me wrong, but many of them are budgeteers. They look at the numbers. They don't put a face on those numbers. They don't know who's up and down the streets of America. We do have, I got to tell you, we've spent some money on polling and various other things, focus groups, all that, because I didn't want to be out there talking when I wasn't sure I was absolutely right. The American people understand we need the system. The American people are behind the system. And you know, I think members of Congress just don't understand that how necessary it is.
Well, we're going to continue to do everything that we can to highlight the benefits of Social Security and of Medicare, and to keep fighting for those obvious important programs that are so beneficial to many, many Americans.
Well, I'll tell you, we were very pleased the other night. President Obama spoke about it, but he spoke about it in a fashion that he understood that it wasn't causing the deficit, and he understood that you have to preserve the program. And look, if we have President Obama supporting us, we're going to be in good shape.
Former Congresswoman Barbara Kennelly, the president and CEO now of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We're going to pause here for a short break. You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com.
Attention AFGE members, did you know you have free access to all federal government job listings at your fingertips? Through AFGE's partnership with AVIEW Technologies, you can view all available jobs, apply online, and be notified when a position of interest to you becomes available. View your application progress online 24/7. You'll even get information to make you a better job applicant. Simplify your next career move with AVIEW Technologies. Log on today and check out current job openings at afge.us. That's www.afge.us, and click register.
Some polls say Americans don't trust government. But listen to our members, the real people who work hard for you every day.
I'm Mike Schnobrick, a correctional officer at the Supermax in Florence, Colorado. Trust me, the terrorists are locked down tight.
My name is Janet Winghart, a Social Security claims rep in Fort Lauderdale. Senior citizens can trust me to get them the right check at the right time.
I'm Michelle Reed, a registered nurse at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Trust me, I care for our veterans like family.
My name is Everett Kelly. I work for the Anniston Army Depot, Anniston, Alabama. Trust me, our tanks are tough.
I'm John Gage, president of AFGE. You can trust us. We work for you. Brought to you by AFGE and online at afge.org.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at insidegovernmentradio.com. We've been joined by one of our favorites here on Inside Government, Bob Wiener, the former Clinton White House senior aide. He was also a spokesman in the White House for the White House Drug Czar and the chief of staff of the House Aging Committee at one point. Bob, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Jason. I love doing your show because you bring to the public more substance than any other radio outlet.
Well, we certainly appreciate that, and we love having you with us. And where we are today is another Families USA, this time Health Action 2011. We've seen a lot of great people come through here today. I believe I saw Nancy Pelosi out in the hallway earlier, a number of great guests. What have you seen so far?
Well, not being among that peer group that you just mentioned, and just being a measly chief of staff of the committee that oversaw aging policy and national health policy, I'll talk as the policy wonk that I am and say it's unbelievable to me how you put Boehner out there and you put Cantor out there and you put Bachman out there and all of them that are speaking, they got nothing. All they want to do is take away and give the power back to the insurance companies. That's all they want to do. The very thing that Obama used some courage and not as much as we would have liked. He didn't go single payer and he didn't go Medicare buy-in, but at least he took away the insurance company's ability to deny coverage to people. And he took away the ability to not give your kids coverage. They're now covered until age 26. And he took away the fact that seniors will not be covered. Now they will be covered for their drug benefits. So the Republicans just want to take all that away, and they want to bring it back to where we pay twice as much as any other nation on earth, and we're still 49th in infant mortality because the insurance companies are a middleman in the United States. So the Republicans want to take all that away because they got enormous $500 million of campaign contributions from the insurance companies, and they want to live under the illusion that everybody's going to be as rich as Rockefeller.
So knowing that this would go nowhere in the Senate, of course, we're talking about a repeal, from the House would go nowhere in the Senate, and obviously the president's not going to touch that at all. He wouldn't repeal anything. Why bring it up in the first place?
It is not a nowhere directional proposal. It is insidious in its danger of tinkering away at the edges and denying the funding for implementation. That's where they might be able to force the issue and cut away and chip away at the legislation. So what we're going to face, Jason, for the next 2 years is a policy of retrenchment. The entire time that we're here, it's going to be where we were in 94 that we had to get back to. And then the pendulum swings, it comes back, the Democrats come back in and all of that. But it takes the public the time to realize that now we're going to have to fight retrenchment against the Republicans trying to chip away for 2 years. So it is not as harmless as it looks. It is a very dangerous situation where they could chip away at the appropriations process. You've got the court case, which 20 attorney generals, they're all Republicans except for one that I don't know how he calls himself a Democrat, but you got 20 Republican attorney generals that are going to try to deny the mandate of the bill, which, by the way, is how it gets paid for. You need the well people to pay for the sick people. That's the point of why it's called interstate commerce, by the way. It is interstate commerce because you need the pool of people that do the transactions. But they're going to try to chip away at that. And they could, not because of the merits. I've talked with some great lawyers who said, well, you can make the case it is interstate commerce. That doesn't matter. Bush v. Gore didn't matter. It's a 5-4 Republican-appointed Supreme Court. So if they see this as the issue that they can define their terms on, they can win in court and chip away at the bill. Thank goodness, though, it really is a chipping away even there. Howard Dean was all over the media saying even if they win in that mandate reduction, that's actually only 4% of the people that will benefit under the bill. So it's not a death blow, but it's a way to chip away. So don't think that we're in the clear because Obama can override any veto. We are not.
Once again, your perspective is second to none. That's a very fascinating point, you know, and we do hear this quite a bit, that the Senate wouldn't want it, the president wouldn't want it, right. That it was completely harmless. And
right.
You're saying completely to the contrary,
right.
That there is danger there.
That's correct. And it's unfortunate, but you know, elections do have consequences. And when the American people elected Republicans, they elected people that want the insurance companies to have the power back over them in their health care.
So, you know, we found in talking to people that when you explain to them what's in the Affordable Care Act, much like if you explain mm-hmm. to people what the federal government does, agency by agency, job by job, key point by key point in this Affordable Care Act, they are much more responsive to it in a positive way, saying, I didn't know that I could keep my child on my plan until he or she turns 26. You know, I didn't know about the pre-existing conditions.
The donut hole for seniors, the children, that's exactly right. No lifetime caps, no preconditions. This is a very – and the 80% of the benefits have to go to health care, not to the insurance companies. That's the one that, you know, they are livid over that one. Even though Medicare has about 2 to 5% administrative costs, but the insurance companies can't live with 20. So they are really fighting to the death on this, even though they got the compromises in the bill of and it's ridiculous that they got them, of no imports of prescription drugs, no volume buying like the Veterans Administration has, so that we can actually reduce costs to the government of some of those things. Even though they got those compromises and went along with the bill because it'll drive down the middle and be through the private sector, through the insurance companies, it's not Medicare and it's not a single payer. Even though they got those compromises, they now are trying to kill it every other which way, even beyond the fact that Bob Dole proposed this bill some 15, 20 years ago.
So as a Democratic strategist, what do you think the appropriate course of action is moving forward to make sure that not only the Affordable Care Act is properly implemented, but that we're not in a situation where we're constantly worried about a repeal, about someone trying to take it away?
We have got to do what I now cover the White House because of my op-eds. And I invite your listeners, by the way, to go to wienerpublic.com, and you'll see them in the Palm Beach Post, Fort Lauderdale Sun, and Miami Herald, and Washington Post, New York Times. You'll see a whole bunch of things all over the place. Even the Washington Times deigns sometimes to cover some of our op-eds and use them. But I think that, you know, Time Magazine, I was sitting at a White House news conference, and the gal said to me, Obama has never explained what's in the bill. And when you talk about what's in the bill, as you just did, Jason, then people say, that's pretty good. I was doing a debate on Fox. Somehow I'm the token progressive now on Fox TV, and they use me to battle some Republicans. And I said, I just came back on a flight, and the airline attendant didn't know that, because I was rehearsing what I was going to say in the debate, that it had covering seniors' drugs, covering kids under 26 on your parents' policy, and lifetime benefits, no pre-existing conditions, and preventive health care, which is a key to cutting costs. And he said, those are great provisions. I didn't know those were in the bill. People don't know those provisions are in the bill. And they also don't know, because the Republicans spin this to such an extent, they say, oh, it's going to cost money, premiums are going up. Yeah, premiums are going up, but they're going up less than they would have. There's protection now and oversight that there wasn't before. And the insurance companies are on the hot seat now. And the Congressional Budget Office, which is bipartisan, says that it saves $100 billion this decade and $1 trillion in the next decade because of this bill over what would have been spent slowing the rise. So when you hear this argument, premiums are still going up, well, yeah, because life happens, but they're not going to go up to the huge, vast proportions that they would have without this legislation. So we have to sell the bill on the provisions, and we have to beat the Republicans by putting facts to the out there, truth to power, on what the bill does. And even though it doesn't have some of the things we want, and the Republicans never tell you that some of the opposition to the bill is the 15% of Americans that wanted it to go further, and they never count that into the fact. So, you know, you really have at least a 60-40 in favor of the bill when you start looking at that. And then when you look at the specific provisions, you're talking 70% and 80% on what's in the bill. But if you want to say, oh, it's socialism and it's government that goes, well, nobody's for socialism except for, you know, maybe 3% of the American people. You know, nobody's for takeover by the government. But when you explain that it actually drives through the middle, that it's private insurance companies, and that it has all these provisions in it, and that otherwise the insurance companies would continue to double the price of health care every decade on you and your children, and that we're paying twice as much as any other country on earth, and we're only 49th in life expectancy because of the middleman that the insurance companies are, and this at least chips away at it and is a step, then people support the bill.
One of the big pieces of the bill, too, is its focus on preventive care. And that, in this country, is very significant. Because if you're able to get your hands around something before it becomes an issue, you're that much better off, right?
Well, it's far better to get cancer at stage one than stage four. My wife is a breast cancer researcher and said that argument that it doesn't save money to do prevention is ludicrous. And a Michigan County executive was on Fox the day before I was on Fox debating on the health care bill a week ago. And he said that in his county, he went from a $50 million a year health bill to $38 million, saving a quarter of their health budget because they, uniquely among counties in the United States, provide preventive health care and annual screenings. So it is concrete. It is empirical. It saves money. I want to say this saves America a ton of money by having preventive health care in there. And the Republicans who say you can't make the case that this bill saves money, here's a case where right on Fox, the Michigan County executive went on and said it saved a quarter of his budget, dropping from $50 million to $38 million in 1 year because he went to preventive health care and caught illnesses before they started.
I want to take a look inside your crystal ball and tell me what you see on this situation in 10 years. Where are we?
I think the bill will be working. I think it's going to be like Canada when they went to national health insurance and everybody was screaming about it and the doctor said it's horrible. I took a trip to Canada with Maggie Kuhn, who was the head of the Grey Panthers, and we went around to all the hospitals in the capital and in several cities, and then we did an op-ed afterwards and made the point that the doctors love the program there now. They won't give it up. And the people of Canada love it, and it's a total myth to say that we have better care than Canada. You know, they're not a third world country. They do great. Their life expectancy is higher than ours. So it's absolutely going to be loved. We will tinker. We will improve, just like we did with Social Security. We had the Pepper, Tip O'Neill, and Ronald Reagan panels that actually made it solvent, much to the myth of the Republicans who want to steal from it now and use the money for other things. It's actually solvent for 40 years by the money that seniors paid in. But it'll be much like that. I think the fact that Obama and Nancy Pelosi really threaded a needle at the end there when you had the abortion people and they didn't, and Stupak gave up his career, Congressman Stupak, moving away from the abortion issue to vote for the health bill, and making the point that he's keeping current law, but he didn't go the extra step that people wanted to put more anti-abortion stuff into the bill. And so there were some real profiles in courage. I actually want to do an op-ed on Stupak as a profile in courage. That was an amazing thing he did there, because without his leadership at the end there coming around for the greater good of the nation for its ever future history of health care, there would be no health care bill. So I think that's what we're going to see, is this was a real profile in courage. The Democrats gave up the House for it in some ways, because the Republicans were able to portray it as a characterization of the same way they did with Hillary Care, by the way, in 94. They made it a characterization of big government and at its worst. And in fact, this health care bill is government at its best.
Bob Wiener, national Democratic strategist and former Clinton White House staffer. As always, Bob, thank you for your time.
What a pleasure, Jason. Thanks.
We're going to pause here for a short break. You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Attention AFGE members, did you know you have free access to all federal government job listings at your fingertips? Through AFGE's partnership with AVU Technologies, you can view all available jobs, apply online, and be notified when a position of interest to you becomes available. View your application progress online 24/7. You'll even get information to make you a better job applicant. Simplify your next career move with AVU Technologies. Log on today and check out current job openings at AFGE.us. That's www.afge.us, and click register.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab, or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Ron Pollack, the founding executive director of Families USA. Welcome to the program.
I'm delighted to be with you again.
So we are here at your conference, the Health Action 2011. Tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Well, we've got a huge crowd here, advocates from all over the country. And we're focusing on two things. Now that we've passed the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act that extends very important benefits and rights to the American people, there are two major tasks that we all have in front of us. Number one, we've got to make sure that this wonderful new law gets implemented effectively in states all across the country. And the advocates who are here are dedicated to make that happen. But the second thing is, unfortunately, there are a good number of members of Congress recently elected who have decided they want to undermine this legislation. They want to repeal the legislation. And so one of our key jobs is to protect this legislation from repeal or being destroyed in any way. We all think any legislation can be improved. But it's one thing to try to improve something. It's another thing to try to destroy it. And we'll make sure it won't be destroyed.
After all the work that went into getting the Affordable Care Act passed and become a law, what could possibly bring it down? Why would someone even want to do that?
Politics. This is pure politics. You know, if you listen to Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, he made clear what this game is all about. He wants to make sure that President Obama is a one-term president. That's what he said in front of the Heritage Foundation. And so the Republicans, even on ideas that originated with Republicans are opposing those things because they're in legislation that the Democratic Congress and President Obama ultimately succeeded in getting enacted for the American people. So, you know, this is all politics. Unfortunately, we're going to be on the side of the American people, the America's families, and make sure that these various rights that already many of them in existence today, they're not going to be taken away.
Talk about some of those things that have been implemented. I know come 2014, it'll look a lot different. But right now, what are some things that have been implemented from the act that people can use?
Yeah, there are a host of things. So in no particular order, for young adults who are under 26 years of age, they may be in an entry-level job. They often find it difficult to get insurance or they can't afford it. They can now stay on their parents' policy up to their 26th birthday. So there's a lesson there. Be good to your parents. Secondly, children, if they have a pre-existing condition, if they've got asthma or diabetes or some other health problem, insurance companies won't sell coverage for them. Now, pre-existing conditions can no longer be a reason for denying health care coverage. So children are protected. For senior citizens suffer because the prescription drug coverage that they have has a huge gap, so-called donut hole. It's a euphemism. It's a huge gap. Today, $3,600. It's supposed to extend to $6,000 in the next few years. Under this legislation, last year, anyone who fell in the donut hole received a $250 check from the federal government. This year, starting January 1, anyone who falls in the donut hole will be able to get their brand-name drugs at a 50% discount. And ultimately, over time, there no longer will be this gap in coverage. Senior citizens also can now get preventive care. They can get a checkup for free, no deductibles, no co-payments, so that the Medicare program becomes a health care system rather than a sickness system. It means that people who have a major illness, they often wind up hitting a lifetime cap, and the insurance company no longer pays out any more benefits, and you're totally on your own, and you go into big debt or you have to file for bankruptcy. No more lifetime caps. In the next few years, there won't be annual caps either. Now, if your insurance company denies your claim, you've got care, if they deny your claim, you don't know what to do. You're powerless. Now you can appeal that to an objective hearing officer who's not part of the insurance company, so you can actually get a fair hearing. So there's a host of things that people are getting that are very important, and we don't want them taken away.
And so what are organizations like Families USA doing to make sure that all of these things that people worked so hard to achieve are not taken away?
Well, the most important thing is are coming to programs like yours and making sure the American public understands what their benefits and rights are. Because if they don't understand it, then they won't be able to take advantage of them. And so what you are doing, frankly, is the most important thing. Through your programs, you can help inform people. And so we're thrilled to come on your program anytime you'd have us. We're also going to be conducting forums all across the country. The key thing here is just tell people the facts. You know, it's very interesting that when you see the various surveys and you ask people, well, do you want to be able, for your kids under 26 years of age, do you want them to be able to stay on your parents' policy? People say yes. Do you want to eliminate pre-existing condition exclusions? Of course we do. Do you want seniors to be able to be protected so they don't have this big... You know, you go through that whole list of things, and people say, of course, and they say it by huge percentages. They don't know, however, that that's in this legislation, and that's what all of our job is.
That is a great point, because a lot of times people will hear about, oh, the health care bill, and they will either be against it, lukewarm about it, or just frankly unsure what it means. But when you start to go down through it, line by line almost, and point out the things that you just did about each individual case, you know, how it can benefit somebody, then the perception of it certainly changes whenever you're able to educate people about what's in it.
That's right. There's been so much mythology. You know, death panels. You know, the government is going to decide who lives and who dies, and particularly for senior citizens, or a government takeover of the health system. You know, when we have a private health system, and actually we're going to make it thrive in such a way that people can afford coverage and care. So, unfortunately, due to these myths, a lot of people were confused. And so our job is not to get into the political rhetoric of this, but just to explain the various provisions, what they are, how they will affect people's lives. And I guarantee you, as people learn about it, they're going to feel very good that this was a major step in giving them protection and security.
Now, how does the Act help small businesses to give their employees health coverage?
Well, it does it in two ways. One way is already being implemented. The other one will be implemented in a couple of years. The one that's already in operation is that small businesses now can get a tax credit to help pay for the costs of covering their workers. You know, most of the people who are uninsured in the country, the breadwinner is actually working, but they tend to work in a small business, and the small business doesn't feel that it can provide health coverage for its workers. So by providing these tax credits, these are 35% tax credits. By the way, in 2014, they'll grow to 50% tax credits. This is very important, and that's we're seeing insurance companies are telling us that they are actually getting more small businesses signing up because of this tax credit. Now, that's the second way, which is in effect in 2014, is that small businesses, if they choose, will be able to go into a new marketplace that is called an exchange. And this marketplace will array a wide variety of plans. The benefit for small businesses is that rather than bargaining on their own for what the premiums are, they'll now be in a broader pool. And so they'll have better bargaining power, there'll be economies of scale, and so that will help to keep premiums down. So those are two very powerful mechanisms that small businesses will have that they didn't have before this legislation.
Those are some very powerful things, I think, for small businesses to be able to provide those that health coverage for their employees, correct?
No doubt. And, you know, small businesses, they want to provide coverage. But if you can't afford it, you just simply can't do it. So these steps are going to be helpful steps so that more small businesses can provide coverage for the first time. And for others that have been providing it, that are being staggered by cost, hopefully this will help and provide them with greater stability so they can retain coverage for their employees.
Now, you mentioned Families USA would probably be holding some forums around the country to gauge people's feedback. What have you heard so far from people when you talk to them about the health care coverage and how it's impacting their working families?
Well, I want to accentuate what I said before. People still are confused. And so when we do forums, when we go on programs like yours and more people learn about it, there really is a change because people, they're not just interested in broad arguments about politics. They want to find out how it's going to affect themselves, their families, their loved ones, and their neighbors. And so the more they learn about how they actually are going to get improvements and protections and greater affordability of higher quality care. People like that. So we still have a huge amount of work to do to try and dissipate all the confusion and the myths.
Ron Pollack, the Executive Director of Families USA, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you for the work that you're doing for America's working families.
Well, thank you for the work that you do so that so many of us can be informed about things that affect our lives. Thank you.
Thank you to our guests this week, Senator Tom Harkin, Congressman Joseph Crowley, former Congresswoman Barbara Kennelly, Democratic strategist Bob Wiener, and Families USA Executive Director Ron Pollack. And that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and Aview Technologies.